I want to keep my life as simple as a busy life can get. I want to remain always a woman living a life of relationships and duties, rather than a woman seeing herself as a teacher, a writer, or through the lens of any other outer gift. I feel that if I see myself as coming to the world through my gifts, I have left the small life. What this has meant to me is a continuing, daily discipline of attending to my personal correspondence and duties before I think to take up this handbook. Seekers write into our website each day, and I answer those emails first in my day, finishing with the snail mail people send us. This correspondence and the normal requirements of the daily round usually consume a good deal of time. This has made the handbook progress far more slowly than if I sat down in the morning and wrote until stopping time at evening. But it has also meant that when I come to it, I can sit down with a mind utterly free of other concerns. Everything else in my life is secure and quiet, and I am released to focus with my utmost love on the material and ideas at hand. I cannot express what a blessing this wonderful atmosphere of beautiful thoughts and high ideals has been to me throughout the writing of this 519, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life Work. And yet I remain a person living a life, who is also writing a book, rather than a person writing a book, who is also living a life. In living the small life, the chief jewels are our relationships and small chores. How can maintaining our family relationships and friendships, keeping ourselves and our things clean and in good order, and fulfilling our small promises to community, church or other organizations be so precious? Their value is in their grounded reality and in the way they keep us real. If we have good relationships, those friends will keep us real to ourselves. If we maintain our normal chores and duties, they will keep us relatively humble and lacking in pride, except the pride in doing things well. These values may seem somewhat paltry when we are not challenged by change, but if we suddenly receive traumatic changes in our lives, whether seemingly bad or good, they will greatly help to stabilize and balance us. Sudden wealth, fame or power can be very disorienting, as well as personal catastrophe and sadness. Good things can make us just as crazy as disasters. I encourage us all to preserve the values and priorities of the small life for ourselves. It is a way of seeing to perceive all things as holy and worthwhile. There is enhanced truth and joy in doing things as those things get smaller. The sacredness of sleeping and rising, eating and washing up, going out and in to do daily chores, lies embedded within them for us to discover. We can avoid the big life, no matter how big we seem to get. We do not have to take on the bigness of others' views of us, either. Are we famous? Now that is a handicap to a quiet life, but it is not insurmountable. Keep repeating, "I am a bozo," while finding a way to stay real within yourself. Are you in a huge job? That is very sedgy of yourself concept. But you can work with that, reminding yourself of your beauty as a simple fool of eating, drinking and being more or less merry. When the life gets large and puffed up, it is very hard to get a solid carillon with our essential selves. So we need some way of moving back into the small life, the rule of life that contains our essential needs. A great key is the simple belief that our small life is worthwhile. How often we have been taught that it is not, especially if we are women who think of living at home and offering ourselves to the raising of children and the keeping of a home. In order to gain the world's respect, it will often seem that we have to succeed in the world of jobs and finances. Knowing that the small things are sacred and that doing them is honorable helps restore them to a position of respect and honor within ourselves. Let us put our heads down to work, but let us raise them up frequently to see, really see, the holiness of the leaf, the sunset, the cricket's song, the firefly's rise. This is 520, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life, where the real value of life is, in the passing beauty, the momentary task, the relationship that comes to us in this present moment with a question or a story in its hand. Don Cushing, Jr., a member at our meditation meetings many times, wrote me in 1994 to ask if I had any helpful hints regarding the necessity of the wanderers relearning a path to adepthood. 14 I wrote him then, and affirm now, that as far as I know, the central keys to this are realizing that we have adepthood within us, and realizing that the straightest path to it is to work on the awareness of the sacredness encompassing and consuming each present moment. It is truly written that the place whereon we stand is holy ground. It does not take Moses' burning bush to sanctify ourselves or the earth we walk. They are already sacred, for the very nature of life itself is holy. In a way, a rule of life is an artificial thing, with its options and choices and agendas of things to do and orders of priority. It is our bit of artifice and composition. It does not deliver us to the perception of glory or unity. It is, like so many things, a resource that tends to aid us in accelerating the rate of our spiritual maturation. Like any thought construe, it brings its diaries of thought, its suggestions and hints, its disciplines that open before the interested eye. In another way, it is a system of choices that supports and undergirds our choice of polarity, works to help stabilize our developing spirit within and places us within a peaceful and undefended heart. Those of you who say, we would suggest that each awakened soul choose for the self that rule of life which most nurtures the spiritual child within, that child that dwells in the heart and can become mature only as the outer self makes room and time for it. Time spent in silence, whether formal meditation is offered or whether it is simply sitting, greatly aids the spiritual self within. Further, it helps to align the seeker with her personal destiny, for each has come with gifts to share, lessons to learn and service to offer. Each has planned for the self companions along the way and good work to do, and each has hoped that within the veiled conditions of the physical illusion that constitutes consensus reality upon your planet that the awakening would occur and the choices would begin to be made which would more and more allow the spiritual self within to mature. 15 It seems helpful to me to muse upon this inner spiritual child that we beget from our worldly selves when we begin to awaken. In a way, each of us is birthing the Christ child or a powerfully loving spiritual being within there. 521, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life Manger of His Own Heart. These spiritual beings are beautiful infants. They have much to learn, and we will be those who either bring gifts and show encouragement to these fragile heart children within, or through impatient condemnation, send doubt and rejection to those infant souls. It takes a good deal of patience and restraint to come into loving relationship with this growing child within. That self has all the maturation to experience that the worldly self does. It will individuate and rebel. It will be at odds with the surface personality again and again. Being our own spiritual parents is delicate work, and never easy. But we do have the help of that force roughly called personal destiny by the UO. We are people who have placed the plan for our incarnational experience before ourselves quite carefully, and we will repeatedly hear that small voice that suggests how the tides of this destiny are flowing. Perhaps we will achieve a new schedule of living for periods of time, but often the rule of life must be quite flexible. It is not necessary for each day to be a carbon copy of each other day in terms of a rule of life. Each seeker will need to adjust its rule of life according to its surface weather, its felt needs at the level of the surface, at the level of time and space anchor ions within the illusion. It is not only satisfy or e but recommended that each alter the rule of life as needs, hungers and desires are felt. Let us attempt to clarify this. Just because one has ceased to feel enthusiasm for a given price, that does not suffice as a reason to alter the price. As long as one is not hungering for another specific price, it is well to be persistent in enthusiastic weather and in adverse weather alike. However, as long as the seeker moves into that listening, that silent listening regularly, the seeker can feel fairly confident that it will have the inspiration and the desire to alter its price when that alteration is appropriate. 16 Note the continuing suggestions to meditate and spend time in silence. There seems no better friend to a life lived in faith than silence. One issue of those with the rule of life is control. It seems rather cold and controlling in a way to choose a way of living which is so pervasively laid out before us. It may seem as though we have eliminated spontaneous new awarenesses from our plan for spiritual evolution. Those of you who suggest one possible technique for the entity wishing to release that which it sees as control that it does not wish to retain within its behavior patterns would be to enter into the meditative state and to look at the patterns that the entity has developed, and to see these patterns of behavior as a web of rituals or habits which are given comfort. Look at this pattern and the barrier that it presents to further experience. In 522, chapter 15, the devotionally lived life, that there is the holding of the thought and Narayan of the entity within the pattern. Imagine the experience that would ensue should the pattern be altered. Look to those areas where there is the desire for inspiration, for innovation, for the breaking of the patterns and the introducing of new experience. Feel how this breaking of old patterns and the introducing of new behavior would earth the life, the feelings, the concept of self. Imagine this process mentally. Then, when you feel that you would like to experiment with such innovation, allow yourself a period of time that is unstructured, so that whatever feelings or intuitive inclinations might wish to surface may do so. Move with these feelings as you wish, as feels appropriate. Explore in this safe arena of unstructured activity and thought all the attendant feelings and activities that move into the mind as you are experimenting. Repeat this process a number of times so that you begin to get the feel of releasing comfortable patterns and the feeling of accepting that which is new. 17 As we become more accustomed to having a rule of life founded on blind faith, we may well find that a new fearlessness has come to us. We will tend far less often to run away from the small difficulties of relationships and responsibilities. In a real way, having a rule of life objectifies the earnestness of our spiritual quest to ourselves, and helps us respond on at the processes involved in awakening. The more discipline that you bring to your way of living, your rule of life as this instrument would call it, the more you do rest in faith and do not contrary away from the catalyst that constitutes this review, this test of your awareness of your balance. 18 The process of choosing a rule of life starts with the most basic of choices, to live in faith, to espouse ideals and to decide how to express these choices in daily life. It evolves into a way of seeing ourselves as magical and transcendental persons, coming from skin and bones and birth and death, but moving into eternity, infinity and deathless principles. It takes all the myriad forms of spiritual work and splays them out for us to choose from, like bolts of fair cloth at the drapers when we are looking for curtains for our bowers. It makes us quilt makers, sewing a gusset of faith, a piece of meditation, a swatch of service and all the rest of the materials of our lives into a counterpane that can clothe and cover us as nascent and developing souls. 523, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life. Dealing with suffering. There is suffering involved in each door you open in life. Wherever you look, in whatever land, in whatever serp, you find that those who would be true servants have made tremendous sacrifices, even unto giving up the life for others. You find people in each situation whose heart has remained open regardless of the circumstances. And you feel the strength of inspiration from those entities, those people who make the news for a day or two because they have leapt into the water and saved five people before they drowned, or went into a prison and released the prisoners, paying with their lives. And these stories touch deeply within your being and let you know of the depth and profundity of love that you have within you, and resonate and exalt and express the light and joy for knowing the beauty of those spirits and their great gifts. But we say to you that there are many, many millions more whose sacrifices and suffering you never see, for they suffer emotionally, and mentally, and spiritually, bearing witness to love, being givers of light regardless of the circumstances that would fell a lesser being. And each of you has opportunity after opportunity to meet situations without fear, to open to any catalyst whether it seems positive or painful. The faith to remain steady is to be prized, for there is, in steadiness, a vision, clear sight, and in persistence of openness, healing and forgiveness. 19 We return to the theme of the suffering of ourselves and of the human condition as we look at the nature of the devotional life. One great pillar of such a life is the calm and chilly assumption that we have, in the lives unfolding before each of us, just and excellent opportunities for learning all we have come to learn and sharing all the gifts we have come to share. A good bit of this learning and some of the service will seem to create suffering, sorrow, anger, grief and other negative emotions within us. As the catalyst comes into our lives, we gaze at the change such catalyst seems to require, and we lose our nerve for a while. One way or another, fear contrives within us from time to time, as life happens to us, and we suffer. I have seen arguments that no one really suffers at all, that it is a choice. Those of you who persuasively suggest that, you may deliver yourself into suffering if you wish, and say that you suffer in order to learn. This is a distortion which is subjectively true to many. You may also say that you maximize your opportunities to learn in order to learn. This is another way of saying precisely the same thing. Thusly, you may have pain greeted like the sister or brother that it truly, 524, chapter 15, the devotionally lived life is, welcome it with respite into your life, treat it as an honored guest, and be free of any suffering. 20 This excerpt from the UO is a prime example of their somewhat skewed way of thinking, relative to earth customs. I do suffer, and it is hard for me to believe I would choose to suffer. Yet perhaps to some extent we do, as we become more and more aware of the benign place of past suffering in our lives, and yet continue to resist present sorrow and other negative sets of mind when they arise within us. The UO say, we ask you to gaze with a cold eye upon the suffering involved in transformation, for this attitude is a balanced one in our humble opinion. It is to the person who is able to gaze upon the dark night of the soul with an indifferent eye, but a full and willing heart, that this process may begin to come easier. By releasing and yielding to your suffering, by welcoming that which must be suffered as a brother and as a sister, by offering the hospitality of your life, your body, your mind, your strength and your will to this process, the heart is opened as if by magic, and you find that no matter how intensely you hurt, it does not kill but, rather, cleanses, empties, renews and readies that instrument to be an ever clearer, purer and brighter channel for the light that must come through into the world or the love that must come through into the world, not from you but through you. 21 Becoming a light worker is a matter, at least in part, of altering the way we look at life, until we see ourselves as serving the forces of light and life by how we are, with ourselves, with those around us, with the catalyst coming to us and with the energy coming through us. If we prioritize our goals so that the goals of expressing essence of self and being come before the goals of deed and doing, we begin to shift over into the point of view of one who works with light. Light is coming through our systems at all times from the infinite creator, but it is as we bless and consciously send these energies on through our systems and out into the world that the energies are enlivened and transduced, and become coherent enough to lighten the planetary vibration. Some of these energies are those which involve the suffering we experience as we meet catalyst and respond, and the whole becomes experienced to us. Why do we let the earth world continue to offer us suffering? Some of us try to refuse, to remain observers so that we avoid suffering, but I am convinced this is no long-term answer. Suffering continues whether or not we admit its presence, and it distorts us from within more by being repressed than by being dealt with as it arises. Repressed suffering can harden into adhering. 525, Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life Karma, as negative feelings are not worked through, relationships sour, and we end our incarnations without resolution or forgiveness in some particular regard. One answer to why? Is that we let this suffering happen because for the most part we cannot avoid it. The earth world is designed specifically to give us seasons of great resistance and challenge. It is trying to knock us out of the pride of our mind's knowledge of form and matter, logic and reason, and beyond outer illusion, into the silent wisdom of the heart. I have seen it said often that the longest distance in the spiritual search is the 14 inches from head to heart. You know that which you see is an illusion, even your scientists speak to you thus. Your poets have always spoken so. Why do you open your eyes and allow yourselves to be pulled into an illusion that you are so aware of as an illusion? The answer is very simple. You are doing what you are supposed to do. Were you able to be blind to this illusion and awake to joy, you would not, nor should you, be here, dwelling in this illusion, learning and suffering and changing and transforming yourself, day by day, step by weary and seemingly plodding step. You have come here and have given up your true sight, and so you do not find your blindness a virtue. This is the forgetting, this is the veil, this is birth into an illusion, and you have plunged yourself into its icy waters, because in your courage you have wished to become better, to become more single-minded, to find more courage, to burn brighter, to have more passion and more single-mindedness in love of the one infinite ideal thought that is love itself. 22 Since we wish to become better, since we hope to advance our own evolution and the planetary evolution, we dive from a pre-incarnative life, from what seems from this perspective a heavenly state indeed, where the truth is known that all is one, and from which all learning can be easily seen to have its just reasons, to plunge into a chaotic earthly environment where truth, light and cause are most often half hid in darkness. We come to the archipelago of Earth life with its many islands of organization that do not harmonize, and the confusion in between them that rolls with its tides of circumstance. We are voyaging Argos 23 of experimenters in that sea of living, looking for balance in the tides and a harmonious home on islands which often appear to lack such a feature. The deepest goal of one who leaves bliss in order to suffer is to find the joy within the suffering, to find the light within the darkness, to accept and thus solve the riddle of opposites. For if the life is a gift, a holy one, one set apart, then to live, to love, to feel, to be, is the true vocation. 526. Chapter 15. The devotionally lived life and all irons stem then not from the necessities of the employment or the personal situation, but from the inner agenda, which is to experiment continuously with the being, seeking always to polarize more and more towards a conscious inner realization of the wholeness and perfection that lie within the illusion, that make of the life a beauty and a gift. It is difficult sometimes for one who is suffering to see the beauty within the self, to realize that the self, by itself without iron, is the true gift to the Creator and the true reason for this experience you call living. 24 What it seems to come down to is that this earth was designed to test and try, refine and alter the material of our personality shell, and to an increasing extent as we learn to be more than that shell of self, the deeper soul material we came here to refine as well. There seems no good way to learn without the catalyst and the suffering that is sometimes the honest emotional response to the catalyst. Nothing else works as a chisel to uncovering and shaping our gemstone of self like the winnowing and beating of suffering on our surface natures. There is no desire which is not fulfilled, and when one feels that one has worked for a long period of time and yet the goal has not been accomplished, it is often interesting to go back and re-examine the deep desires of the heart and mind. It may be that there is a far, far deeper desire for the deeper learning which is brought about when one has a long-standing and seeming failure. This consciousness of clay feet and imperfection causes a kind of unhappy tension which is called suffering, and this suffering creates a frame of mind in which the deeper senses become more and more sensitive and begin to make choices. We question each who has an unfilled dream whether in the suffering which has gone into disappointment there has not been a great deal learned which could never have been learned in the face of continued contentment and happiness. 25 In looking in hindsight at the gifts suffering has brought in its hands, we can often find the trail of breadcrumbs back to the original pattern that brought forward the difficult emotions. We can begin to see into the value of these seasons of suffering, and it becomes easier for us to approach new times of suffering with trusting and peaceful hearts. The key here is to risp this incarnation, to risp the times of celebration and the times of suffering, however they may be perceived. You came into this illusion because you wished for these complications and destructions, not to look at them and then turn aside and move out. 527. Chapter 15, The Devotionally Lived Life of the World. Necessarily, but rather so to orient the self that the limitless and unbounded truth that overflows each moment may, in the present incarnation, be encouraged to express the deeper and deeper nature of the self which transforms all the everyday experiences into those freighted with that precious burden of the immanence of love. 26. When a tough time comes, we need to allow the catalyst and the responding emotions to flow through us like water seeping through stones. It will leach impurities and cleanse. There may well be pain, but if we do not grab it and hold it to ourselves, it will proceed through our systems and express itself, at its own rate. If it is a time for your being to experience a negative-seeming manifestation, gaze steadily into your brother difficulty. Know and accept that this, too, is a portion of the self, nor does it need to give rise to the negativity of thought form, for peace may be found in sorrow, yet sometimes the sorrow may be long in order that the spirit survive and heal. In those cases the sorrow is well if the spirit of faith in the positivity that surrounds, that which is needed to burnish the tapestry which one incarnation creates, for suffering done in nobility of mind, dignity of spirit and greatness of heart creates a somber, bright beauty that flames amongst the other stitches of the tapestry, giving to it a truer and richness it would otherwise not have. Never mistake difficult challenges and others' negativity to you for that which must be put into your tapestry, those stitches made by your heart and your mind. You are a sovereign being, an image of the Father. My friends, we are young gods. Let us search together for the face of our true identity. 27. To say that we are young gods sounds rather presumptuous. Yet if we follow the logic of a creator of love and a state of unity of all that is within the creation and its creator, we are inevitably drawn to the conclusion that in an ultimate sense we are the stuff of deity in an illusory and unfinished form. Seeing this quality within ourselves gives a good contrast to times when we are seeing all too clearly the face of our own pain. We ask you to look always not only at the frail, brave, suffering and hollowed out human which became a channel to be of service to many, but to spend time gazing upon the face of deity, however you may find it and by whatever names you preserve it. It is a good thing to be what you are, and what you are will grow and change and transform, yet it is likely that one pattern or another is most likely congruent with your vibratory energy pattern. Thusly, not all of you will be Christians. Not 528. Chapter 15, the devotionally lived life. All of you will be Sufis, and so forth. Yet all these strew you as yield the same living water. All are channels through which this water may flow, and it is the discipline and devotion and firm intention to follow the example set before you that will open to you the consciousness which all have come to give, that one consciousness of the one Creator. You have within you that one Creator. And, in far, in the end you shall be that one Creator. 28. As we attempt to increase our amount and quality of awareness of this spiritual self that will grow into deity, that is our gem within, we turn once again to the refrain of the brothers and sisters of sorrow, enter the silence within our hearts, and join the one infinite Creator for regular times of communion. However we shape that, we encourage each to turn from the question of why long enough each day to spend a few moments or minutes with the infinite Creator. The answers are within, and there is far more help than each here can imagine which is available to those who call upon loving, positive, discarnate energies. We encourage this leaning upon the invisible company of those who would support you. As you ask within, you will feel that sympathy in the depths of your heart and so will know that truly no one suffering suffers alone. The invisible company of those who love is the just as close as the breathing or the thinking. 29. I encourage us all to lean into that muscular silence of the Creator, and into the strong and powerful prayers of the many unseen presences that are here to help all beings. Every sweet deed and gentle thought, every longing prayer and affirmation of the light attracts those in the discarnate world whose thoughts and ideals are similar. The more we polarize, the more help we have to encourage and support us in our chosen biases and polarity. And eventually, we will find ourselves clear enough of our own miseries to become aware of the substantial suffering of the whole world, and more, Our personal work will become more closely connected to our planetary prayers and work, as we see the connections between the suffering of all others and the suffering of ourselves come closer and closer, and finally conjoin. And as we come to love ourselves, we come to love the world and everyone in it.